From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a wine bar when a woman approached the bar to order a couple of glasses. She happens to know wine very well. She's very well versed in the world of wine. She could talk about favorite varieties or regions. She's traveled, knows her stuff much better than me. But as a black woman with a white husband, she's not always treated the same at the bar. Now, Maya Johnson's a 30-something wine blogger until recently, at least. She posted under the name Chasing Grapeness, a tasty little wine pun filled with a whole lot of passion. She's got a way with words and descriptions, equal parts expert and accessible. She loves to meet new people and understand what each part of the world gives to grapes. This is a world that doesn't have a whole lot of black winemakers or black-owned wineries. There are some, but not a whole lot. But she has loved this world. Recently, though, her view of that industry began to change even more. Where was that industry when its black customer base was hurting? Where were the signals of solidarity, of welcoming, of support? In the summer of George Floyd, Maya Johnson shut down her wine writing. It didn't feel right at the time. Two local businesses recently hosted dinners with Johnson, essentially emceeing the events there. And they supported the Black Physicians Network of Rochester as well as Yoga for a Good Hood. Johnson chose those organizations because she sees the need to support black-owned and black-operated organizations. And she wonders what's next for an industry that sparked her passion, only to make her feel turned off in certain ways. Let's talk about all of the complex issues that go into this. Our guest this hour is the woman behind Chasing Grapeness. We'll see if there's a future for that. Maya Johnson is with us now. It's great to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm good. And why don't we kind of go back a little bit here, and why don't you tell listeners, before we really dig into the recent events here, a little bit more about you and where you grew up and what the path to this region was like for you.
Sure. So I grew up in a small, predominantly white town outside of Boston, Massachusetts, and was so lucky to grow up in that town. It just afforded me so much, especially as, you know, small kid of color. My family was one of about six families that lived in the town and sent their kids to the local high school. So, few and far between in terms of diversity in the actual town that I lived in. And we did have, you know, a MECA program. We were busing some students into the suburbs as well, just so there's a little bit more diversity. But you know, sort of a different experience. And eventually I sort of went off to college in Connecticut and sort of jumped around to live in New York City and start working in marketing and internet. And eventually found my way to meeting my now husband, who brought me out to Rochester. And through him, I discovered the Finger Lakes. We sort of met and were dating long distance. But every time I would come visit him out this way, because I was still living in Boston at the time, we would always run as quickly as we can to the Finger Lakes and stay at his family's cottage on Keuka Lake and taste some wine and sort of fell in love, you know, both with wine and with each other during that time.
How long have you been in Rochester?
Been in Rochester about 2 years now, or going on a third. And it surprised me pleasantly. I really do like it out here.
Well, that's great. We're glad to hear that part of it. Was there a first sort of formative wine, either individual wine or wine experience that made you go, oh, this is beyond just sort of a fun little weekend excursion? Like, this really grips me.
Yeah. Probably my first trip, Andy wanted to go visit this winery. It was called Limeberry. It's no longer on Keuka, but he sort of talked about it as being his dream one day. It was, you know, a retired couple that chose to make wine. And through Limeberry, we just spent a lot of time with the owners, Joe and Melissa. They were just so welcoming and so willing to teach and sort of introduced us to more people. And eventually we made our way over to Serenity as well, sort of walked in sheepishly at 4:45. And as you know, most wineries close at 5 p.m. in the Finger Lakes. And, you know, the winemaker at the time was so willing to just spend time with us. And the more that we asked questions, the more excited he got. And the next thing we knew, we were tasting from a barrel. And it was just so cool to see that welcoming nature of some people just want to share what they love to do.
Do you have, did you have an expectation about wine before you got to the Finger Lakes about, you know, whether you would be into it or were actually curious about it?
I was getting curious about it. You know, I think I had enough of the awful stuff that you drink when you're in college, but that's what you buy because you can afford it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And, you know, having worked in, or, you know, working actively in marketing, especially in New York City, I was taking clients out to dinners and finding myself having to, you know, pick a wine that might impress somebody and surprising myself when I would. So that just kind of made me a little bit more interested in trying to learn about it a bit more from the people who are actually making it.
I can totally relate to that. I mean, so I drank a little bit of Natty Light in college, you know, it was like, what are guys in college drinking? And I remember trying to impress a woman on a date, and when I went to a high university, picked up a bottle of white Zin. Well, there's nothing wrong with white Zin, by the way. If people like whatever they like, yeah, they can drink. We don't look down our nose at it. It was just for me. That was a big step up. And my roommate said, oh, you went with the good stuff tonight. You're serious about this. So, yeah, everybody has those little moments where you go, oh, this is different. This is really, really different. Did it feel instantly accessible to you?
Not always. You know, I think that there's a reason why a lot of people feel nervous to talk about wine. Sometimes it just gets itself elevated in a way that makes people feel like they can't be involved. I think some of it is partly by design, and I think some of it is just because it's kind of hard to understand. I mean, there are so many grapes. There's no way that you will ever know what everything will taste like, especially with everybody making blends and wine tasting different every time you make it. But I think that's kind of what should be the joy of it, you know, sort of the exploration.
Well, and so let's talk then about how that kind of grew into chasing grapeness. Which, by the way, who came up with that term?
I wish I could. It was sort of a joint effort between Andy and myself. We were we had just moved in together, actually, in Rochester, and had to head to New York City for a wedding. And what do you do when you have an extra time and you like wine? You try to find the nearest wine country. So we drove to Long Island the afternoon before the wedding, and I joked that we were always chasing grapes, and he said, chasing greatness, and immediately claimed the handle on Instagram as fast as they could.
I love that. So how much, tell the audience how much posting and writing you did on Instagram about your experiences.
You know, in the beginning I wrote a lot, and it was fun because I was learning actively, and Andy had taken a few SOM classes, and he was working, you know, behind the tasting bar at Serenity. So that's how that story evolved with that winery mentioned earlier. And it was just interesting for me to learn, and it became more exciting for me to write as I sort of got people commenting about how they really loved the way I would write a review or sort of better understood what I was talking about, just because I wasn't saying it in, you know, these words that sometimes make wine feel very inaccessible. Mm-hmm. And it sort of grew in this really nice and organic way where wineries started sending me wine, which was really cool because I love to drink it, therefore I write about it. But it started to slow down a little bit, you know, just as life started to evolve and I started to really understand sort of this Instagram influencer world, which sometimes isn't as open or transparent as maybe it might lead you to believe.
Were you surprised the traction you got with it?
I was. Sometimes I'm like, who wants to hear me talk about wine? This woman who, like, very clearly has never taken a course.
I don't know how clear that is. I mean, like, when I hear you talk about wine, you have a phenomenal fluency with it. It seems like it's easy. I would have guessed you've been into wine since your childhood. I mean, like, not drinking, you know, like, grew up with it.
I wish that I at least had some real basis of knowledge. I have taken, you know, I took an online course once just so that I could sort of, you know, hold my own a bit more. But no formal training. For me, wine just evokes so much memory, and sometimes that helps me talk about it, which, you know, sometimes is also stressful for me because it's not in the same way that, you know, a sommelier might talk about wine. It's just a little bit different, a little bit more personal.
How often, whether you were at a winery, in a tasting room, or at a wine bar, how often did you feel that you were treated differently because you're a Black woman ordering a glass of wine? And, you know, you're there with a white husband. How often were you treated differently, do you think, based on that?
You know, it depended on where we were. And I think, unfortunately, sometimes it happened more often than I would have liked. And what I tend to do is if I go someplace and I feel like I was treated differently just for the way I looked or, you know, whatever reason, and we just don't go back because I don't want to subject myself to that feeling again of honestly just wanting to have an enjoyable time and not being able to get over the mental of feeling like I was ignored at the bar or, you know, needed Andy to wave somebody down first or somehow was made to seem invisible and you don't really understand why. But it was enough that there are places that we still don't go to today for that reason.
So I understand this is a totally ignorant question, and I just sort of want to own that because what you experience in those moments is not something that I'll ever have to understand or experience, or at least I should try to understand it, but I will not experience it myself. So when you are, for example, ignored, does it feel intentional or does it feel like, oh, well, you know, she's a black woman, she wouldn't be here to order wine? I mean, does it feel sort of implicit, explicit? What are there different sort of flavors of it? How does it usually go down?
Yeah, there are different flavors of it. You know, sometimes wine bars, they get busy. And, you know, I understand, especially in the heat of the summer when you might be a little bit understaffed, you can't be as fast as you need to be. But as fast as you want to be, rather, excuse me, because I've been in that position too behind the bar. But when it starts to feel bad is if I'm standing at, you know, the table waiting for a glass and somebody else walks up who has a different skin color than me and all of a sudden they've got two menus and two glasses and I'm still waiting for mine. That just feels like, hello? Am I here?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel good.
Have you ever been approached when someone assumed that you were simply just working there? Not there to order yourself for yourself.
Luckily, not working there, but you know that happens far too often in places like Target when I'm not even wearing a red shirt. So, you know, it's the kind of thing where it's just unfortunately sometimes inherent, and you know people don't realize it's happening until it's too late. But the one that bears the brunt of the pain is the person it happens to.
Can I ask what the dynamic is between you and Andy when that's happening? I mean, it has to be frustrating. And, you know, he loves you. It's got to be very frustrating for him, too. What is, you know, sort of, is reaction just, this is not worth it, we're out of here? Or how do you kind of, what do you do with that?
You know, I've always been taught to power through. So that's what we do. And you know, he's on board with that. If you know, he has to call over for some glasses, then he does. And then I do my best to insert myself where I can. And I think the coolest thing about Andy is that he's the biggest champion of what I do. So, you know, throughout conversation, he starts talking about, you know, first it was Cheese and Greatness. Now it's my personal Instagram where he's talking about these wine pairing dinners that I'm doing. And it just changes the dialogue so that sometimes people realize perhaps they've sold this person short. And, you know, as much as sometimes I would love to stomp out of a room and just say you're not worth my time because sometimes it isn't, I think it's really cool to have the opportunity to make people realize they should have given me a second glance. And hopefully that just informs their thinking in the future.
Talking to Maya Johnson, who is the woman behind Chasing Grapeness, which I don't know if it's ever going to come back. Is it going to come back, do you think?
You know, there are some posts that I'm really proud of, and I was actually thinking that I might sort of share the best of on my, you know, personal account while I sort of get my act together with what kind of content I plan on producing in the future. So perhaps a little taste of Cheese and Greatness.
Well, there's a lot more to discuss. Let me grab a phone call, though. Rich in Rochester has been waiting. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, how you doing, Evan?
Good, sir.
Hi, Maya. How you doing today?
Good, thank you.
What you're talking about is I've noticed in the industry for a while myself. I'm peculiar in the sense that I've never drank, but I am totally enamored with the wine industry, everything about it, the style of it, the vineyards, how the wine is produced and everything. And I even noticed it on the show some. I don't know if you watched that documentary.
Yeah.
But there was subtle racism in the fact that the one black character who was one of the major ones, they always put him in roles of not the technical taster, but they talked about how nice he dressed. Or they showed him in the service role. But they would look at the other sommeliers who were testing in their tasting and their technical expertise and how they could smell and all that. There was a few scenes of that with him, but it wasn't that strong. And so I watched it several times. to really examine that. And that's what I saw in that show. I go around to wineries all the time and all that, and I notice, number one, you don't see too many black people there. And I have been sort of pushed to the side too, but I'm more of an engaging person. So I end up talking to people, and then they realize I am interested. I also notice in looking at people, I'm not in an interracial relationship, but I've watched the black partner of an interracial relationship not being recognized or not being validated until I see the white person, the white partner walk, and then the entire tone and the entire way the conversation goes with people changes. And I just watch this from the background, but this subject, even though I'm not a drinker, and literally I've never drank in my life, I love the industry, but I see these same sort of subtle things. And I wish I would have known about, your Chasing Greatness, because I would have been all over it. Even though, again, I have my girlfriend. She's the one who I give all the wine to and say, tell me about this one. I do a lot of smelling. But I just notice.
That's half of wine. There you go, Rich. That's good.
Yeah. I do a lot of smelling.
I appreciate the questions and comments. Amaya, you want to take that? Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's interesting sort of what you bring up, and you kind of got me thinking, and maybe a better way to describe it is sometimes, you know, if I'm standing at a bar and I'm about to, you know, smell the wine and then swirl it and aerate it in my mouth, and it could be as simple as just one eyebrow goes up just a little bit as if, interesting. And, you know, it just sends me into a spiral that just doesn't need to exist when you're trying to enjoy a nice afternoon of wine tasting. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's unfortunate, but I do think that the conversation is changing and it's picking up really interesting speed. And there are a number of people in the wine community and beyond that are just pushing the conversation about diversity. You know, you have so much of it, like we always say in the grapes and in the final production, that we should be celebrating it in terms of who loves to drink it as well. And it's so much more than what you see, for sure.
And real quick, I've always thought this too. I read like Robert, The Advocate. Well, I read a lot of the wine.
Robert Parker.
And I think there needs to be more culturally magazines written about wine. There needs to be critiques written about wine that point to black people, talk in their language. And I'm talking about really talk in their language to get them to also, you know, criticize or evaluate wines without having to know the grape, the vintage, the winery and all that. Because in the end, that really doesn't matter. What matters is how that wine tastes to that person. And I think that needs to be done more, and I don't see enough of that. I mean, I understand the language and stuff, but I find it sort of pretentious after a while. Just talk about how does this wine taste? It tastes like crap. Why does it taste like crap? I don't know how to, but it has to be. Why the wine industry is suffering, but one of the reasons they're suffering is because their strident way of talking about itself as if it's some otherworldly thing. And if you want black people to drink wine, or if you want any group to drink wine, stop talking about the vintage of the wine. Don't tell me that it takes... It tastes oaky. What does that matter to me? It doesn't taste good to me. Can I identify oakiness? Maybe I can't, but why do I have to know that term to say that what I say is legitimate?
Okay. Rich, thank you. What do you think, Maya?
You know, I think it's interesting. At the end of the day, what matters is if you like it. And if you don't like it, then don't drink it. And I think what we need more of are people to sort of serve in a role that helps you understand why you don't like certain things or why you do. And that'll make everybody have a little bit of an easier time when they go to the liquor store. And if you have this very stressful moment of trying to pick out a bottle of wine for dinner, I think I personally find vintage and grape, and I find that all really interesting, but I think it's just because I've talked to enough people now that I'm really curious by the difference in year, and you know, what happens to a Cab Franc Rosé when it's a super wet year versus a dry year, because you can literally see it. But I think that you do bring up a good point that we have to come to people where they are. You just can't throw a bunch of words out there that don't make any sense. You know, honestly, not everybody even has access to Google to figure out what they mean. We've got to figure out a way to make it more accessible to more people. And, you know, unfortunately, that just means talking to more people in different ways to have a broader market base that will get people to feel more comfortable talking and drinking wine.
Well, we've been talking to Maya Johnson about her experience falling in love with wine and experience as a black woman in an industry that there aren't a whole lot of black winemakers or black-owned wineries, and sometimes it can feel a little removed for black clientele, but that wasn't necessarily what pushed Maya to decide she was done for the moment with chasing grapeness. Take us through the events post George Floyd and what happened that you sort of observed about the industry, Maya.
Yeah, it was, I will say, before George Floyd, I just was having some trouble just finding the inspiration to write. Part of the problem might have been that I had just done a dry January, so I also wasn't drinking much wine. But the world just seemed to have a lot going on, and nobody was really writing about any of it when I was looking at sort of these wine, you know, Instagram accounts. It was just wine. And, you know, I'd even been told nobody wants to hear you talk about anything but wine. It started to feel really constricting. And, you know, I wasn't posting photos of myself. If I was posting a photo of any human, you know, it was, you know, Andy, who I think is a very marketable and good-looking white male. So anyway, it stopped feeling like me, even though it was very much a part of me. And then when George Floyd passed, when he was murdered, it was too much. And I'd had a winery sort of reaching out to me, wanting to send me some wine, some varietals that, you know, honestly, beggars can't be choosers, but it just seemed like some varietals with which they hadn't really looked into sort of my interests or the things that I was writing about. And I learned from a few colleagues also in the Instagram world that they were getting sent something from the same winery, and they were just getting, I think, a better quality product. You know, unfortunately, that all sort of happened around the Blackout Tuesday, where everybody posted the black square on Instagram. And I had this brand sort of forcefully reaching out to me, you know, wanting to know where they can send this wine. And they hadn't posted anything about what was happening in the world. And that was kind of the last straw for me. So, you know, I politely declined the wine and told them that they should also consider, you know, posting something about what's happening in the world, because it's not just business as usual. And, you know, we really can't treat it like that. And right after that, I shut down Chasing Greatness for Good.
I think that's, to me, that's very interesting, given some of the ways that companies have debated about what they should or shouldn't say, whether it will look crass or opportunistic, you know, brand building versus genuine. But what you seem to be saying is when you are not recognizing what's going on, you are making a statement of some kind. What is your expectation for companies and what support really looks like, Maya?
Yeah, I do think that people are making a statement with their silence. And, you know, we're in a very strange time right now. Nobody knows what to do. It's a pandemic. Everybody's running around with their head cut off. It's a ridiculous time. And I understand how that could sometimes lead to sort of a paralyzation. But I think it's really important to acknowledge that what's happening isn't normal, because by pretending that it's fine or it doesn't impact us, it's only making it worse. We are just saying it's okay. You know, we really have to kind of speak out and say that it's not. So, you know, what I expect of brands who I serve, you know, I personally spend my money very intentionally to brands who I think are servicing me in many ways. And as they're sort of creating these Instagram accounts that are sort of widely followed by not just, you know, audience members, but I think full fans, I think they start to have they need to sort of be responsible for the message that they are distributing. And if they don't talk about it at all, then it kind of makes it seem like they're okay with what's going on. And I think if they're not, they should be vocal about that.
Let's take our only break of the hour. And when we come back with Maya Johnson, we're going to talk about what happened locally after that. After she made some of those remarks about why she was shutting down Chasing Grapeness, there were a number of people in Rochester who noticed and were really moved by that. And that led to a couple of dinners that Maya essentially emceed and hosted to not only raise awareness of these issues, but also support Black-owned businesses and Black-run organizations. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about where she goes next. And we'll talk a little bit more about what the expectation ought to be when a society is working through some of these issues. And industries have been predominantly white and, you know, sort of claim to care. But the question is, what does that really look like in practice? So much more with Maya Johnson when we come back. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, candidates for the 134th New York State Assembly seat. Join us, your chance to hear them at length on the issues. In our second hour, we expect to hear from the U.S. Senate regarding more on the confirmation hearings of Judge Amy Coney Barrett. If and when that happens, NPR and WXXI will bring live coverage to you. That's Thursday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So when Maya Johnson shut down her Instagram for chasing grapeness, it led to some feedback and some reaction from some folks locally. And I want to talk a little bit about what happened next here, because I met Maya at one of these two recent dinners, the one hosted at the German House. What happened? How did these come together, Maya?
So I one day finally wrote a post on my Instagram about shutting down, on my personal Instagram, about shutting down Chasing Greatness. And it started to get a lot of traction, which scared me because it was my personal Instagram. But I ended up getting a message from Chris Gracchi saying that he had reached out or heard from the owners at Aveeno, and, you know, also had circulated my post, and people were just sort of outraged but not surprised, which has been honestly the going response everywhere, and that they wanted to organize a dinner to really, you know, to bring some light to this and have me be involved, and just totally took my breath away. It was really cool.
To be clear, because Chris will text me, it's the historic German House.
Thank you. Yes.
And
yes,
it
yes.
is the historic German. But so you end up having two events, the first one at Aveeno. Tell me about who you chose to benefit.
So we chose to benefit Yoga for a Good Hood and the Black Physicians Network Rochester. Those just being sort of ongoing important to me, as, you know, we are in a pandemic, and I think both mental health and physical health are very important. And I think that you see sort of a lack of resources for people of color in those areas. So that's why I chose to give to those organizations locally.
All right. And we've got Aqua Porter on the line with us, who is a board member of Yoga for a Good Hood. She's on the line now. Aqua, how are you?
I'm good. I'm great. How are you?
I'm great.
Hey, Maya.
Hi, Aqua.
There you go. See, look at us bringing more connections to this community.
Right.
Aqua, what did it mean to you to make this connection with Maya and that she wanted to benefit Yoga for a Good Hood and has affection for what's happening there?
Well, first of all, I would say we were so thrilled and pleased that Maya chose Yoga for a Good Hood to benefit from the work that she was doing and the cause, because it's so close to, you know, what Yoga for a Good Hood is about, bringing yoga and the kind of the eight limbs of yoga to a community that has traditionally not maybe embraced yoga, not known about it, a community that is experiencing trauma, where yoga can help to relieve and alleviate some of that. It was so important, and so we were really thrilled about that.
Well, I have been out to dinner inside, indoors, one time since March, and it's because I thought this was, first of all, too important, and second of all, an awesome setup. It was a great menu and a great set of wines. Maya did a phenomenal job. And at the historic German House, it felt pretty darn safe. High ceilings, really wide and spaced out. Everyone masked up, and I felt pretty good about it. It's the only time, Maya, I have to say, that I have been out indoors since March, and it might be till March again. I don't know. I try to support small business in many ways as I can. Do a lot of takeout, but that was it. And I thought it was worth it. It was safe. It was careful. And I was really moved by some of what the ways that you challenged the audience. And I want, if you could, let our listeners know some of the things. I mean, I don't know if you remember everything you said that night, but you challenged the audience to really think about the ways people are impacted, especially black people in this country, everything that's happened since George Floyd, but not just based on George Floyd. I thought you were inspiring and frankly tough and challenging. What would you want our listeners to hear, you know, maybe in a similar theme?
Thank you. And also thank you for going. I'm really thankful to everybody that came to an indoor dinner. I was so thankful to the crew at the historic German House for just how comfortable they made it feel. Because I know a lot of people went out for the first time that night, and that just means the world. To be honest, there are some times where I think I'm talking and I just black out because I'm so nervous and I try to get the words out. But I think that the biggest thing is just remembering that, what's happening right now is difficult, but nobody gets a break from it. But especially I think people of color, you know, in the news, you're constantly seeing these protests and people dying, and it's just a lot, and it hits really, really close to home, I think, the darker that your skin gets. And I think it's really important just to remember that we are all dealing with far too much, and that the work needs to be done in all communities, but I think it especially needs to be done in the white community, because the black community is really just holding on and trying to get through the day as we watch these videos on repeat of people being killed with somebody else's bare hands. It's a little bit much, so... I think the more work that everybody can do together, but the more that people can hold themselves accountable for doing the work directly, the better we'll be.
I'm glad you brought that up. I want to ask both you and Aqua about that. I'll start with you, Maya. So that's one of the themes of the 21-Day Racial Equity Challenge that starts on Friday. The WXXI is participating in, dozens of local organizations are. And on this program yesterday, Sasha Mitchell was telling us about the importance of doing the work and of maybe not waiting for someone else to educate you. Maya, what does it mean when you urge white people to, quote, do the work? What does that look like, and what does that mean to you?
It's funny. I had talked with a friend, and we'd had a conversation at the very beginning of all of this sort of unfolding, and it was important for this person to speak with me, and they are white, and obviously I'm black. But it was sort of a conversation where she'd asked me to be patient in the beginning and then stumbled through a lot of words. And, she did her best, and it was a good job at the time. But it was painful, I think, for both of us. And we spoke again now many months later. And in that time, she had been doing a lot of reading on her own that she had found through social media and news lists and newspapers. I mean, she's extremely resourceful in finding the things that she needed to read up on. And the more reading she did, the more she found little gaps that she then started researching further. And it was really amazing to reconnect with this person later and hear this personal journey that they'd been on. And in the conversation, they also said, I'm sorry that I asked you to be patient for me. I realized that was very white centering. And that was incredible, because that's not a term I had ever mentioned to this person. So, I think it's about powering through some really uncomfortable growth, doing some homework, which, nobody always loves, but is necessary to do, and making sure the onus is on you to research it, because it's there. You can find these things. You just actually have to look.
Aqua, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with what Maya said, and I think that the coming to a conclusion where you decide that maybe there are other parts of the story that you haven't heard, and that the reality you live in is based on what you may have only read or heard about, or the community that you live within, is, I think, very sobering to people. And it's hard to maybe look and decide that what you've grown up with all your life isn't the full story, and when you hear the other side of the story, your perspective might change. And so if people are willing to do that work, to maybe recognize that there's other parts of a story that haven't been told. There are truths and facts that may lead you to understand why things are the way they are, that your assumptions might be challenged, and that in some ways you might have grown up with advantages that lots of other people haven't had, and that those advantages give you a starting point in life that's different than others. I think recognizing and understanding that and being empathetic to what that means is really great growth. But it's hard work, and it's not work that a black person can do for you.
Hmm. Aqua, before I let you go, I want to ask you about one other point here. So I've been reading recently about the way the pandemic is impacting small businesses, and women in particular are leaving the U.S. workforce at much higher rates for a number of reasons that have been discussed in a lot of different places. There's real concern about businesses surviving through the winter.
Yep.
Just today, Monroe County announced a brand new program, and I'm sure you'll hear a lot more on this program in the weeks to come, and WXXI will be reporting. But essentially, the program is this. Monroe County is taking $15 million from the CARES Act, from the federal CARES Act, and creating small business grants for businesses that have between 2 and 50 employees. They want to make sure that first in line are women-owned businesses and businesses owned by people of color, also primarily businesses that haven't already gotten some kind of federal financial support during the pandemic. And depending on the size of the business, you'll be able to receive a grant of $10,000 to $20,000. The idea of this being, I think of it sort of a winter survival grant to try to make sure that we don't see a widespread closure. So that's one thing that's happening that Monroe County just announced this afternoon. We'll have a lot more to talk about coming up on that. But I am curious to know how you feel about the way this pandemic is impacting black-owned businesses, businesses in our community, Yoga for a Good Hood. How do you see things going?
Well, I will tell you that in my day job is that I'm the interim executive director at RMAPI, which is the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative. And in that work, we have talked to especially the community that's impacted by poverty. We have talked to parents and women and businesses who are struggling to survive because of the pandemic. They're already in a lot of cases, Evan, you know, not in the same position. They struggle to keep their lights on. They're struggling with paying their rent. Like, everything they're doing, they are struggling. Some people didn't get the CARES money at all. They didn't have access to the banks. So they're struggling just to hold on. And for a lot of people, this is their livelihood. So I am proud of Monroe County for doing this, because I've talked to some of those business owners and some of those small businesses who have gone out of business during this pandemic because they were not able to survive. Mm-hmm. And it's heartbreaking, because the bulk of them are small businesses in our community that once we do get back on our feet, they're not going to be there, and people needed them.
Yeah. Well, Aqua, I want to thank you for making the time to call the program today and share your thoughts about what you've seen from Maya's work, and certainly being one of the beneficiaries at Yoga for a Good Hood of these recent dinners. Thanks for making the time. Good luck to you, and let's stay in touch on these and many other issues.
Absolutely. I'm here for you. Thanks. Thank you, Evan, and great job, Maya.
Thank you so much, Aqua.
That's Aqua Porter, who has mentioned her role with RMAPI and also with Yoga for a Good Hood. We're talking to Maya Johnson, the woman behind Chasing Grapeness. She shut down that account, that social media account, earlier this year, feeling maybe a little bit differently about the wine industry that she had come to love. But let's talk a little bit about some of the other themes that you talked about at this dinner recently, because I really enjoyed some of the stories you told. There were some wines that were poured that were from black-owned wineries, which is pretty rare. I mean, we say pretty rare. What does that landscape look like, Maya, when it comes to black winemakers, black-owned wineries?
you know, there's more than you would think, and I almost hate that that's a sentence I say. But
I take the point, though. I take the point.
Yeah. But what you see first and foremost doesn't look like me. But it's really cool that there is this really thriving group of Black winemakers, sort of across the globe. The ones that I featured at this dinner were Brown Estate, which is the first Black-owned winery, and they have a really beautiful tasting room in downtown Napa. So it's part first Black-owned winery in California in the Napa area. And what I love about Brown Estate is that all the things that you sort of assume you're going to get from this high-end wine brand like a Ferrari, sort of anybody else, you're getting from this Brown Estate. You get the vibe, you get this highly decorated, stunning tasting room, these really beautiful and very expensive wines. And you also get a really nice touch of education with your tasting that doesn't feel stuffy. It's really cool and fun. And I think that just says a lot about the people that they've hired in their tasting room who are there to talk about wine because they love it, but also just to have a good time when they do it.
Yeah, I think a story of sisters. I'm trying to remember here.
Oh yes, McBride sisters. They're really cool. I actually saw them at a marketing conference in Boston, and they were two long lost sisters. They share the same father and have two different mothers. So they're both living with their mothers, one in New Zealand and one in California. And the dad was dying and wrote them both a letter, asked them to find each other, and they did, and bonded over a love of wine. And now these two mixed, half black, half white, sisters own this really cool wine label that produces wine both from New Zealand and California, just parts of both of them.
What a cool story. And it's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because it goes back to, do you like it? Then it's great.
Yeah.
I think they, and once again, sort of everybody's producing various levels of wine, sort of a higher end wine and perhaps a more affordable entry point wine. But I think the cool thing about them is that it's marketable to everybody. And I think that's what a lot of people should be doing.
Rara writes to us to say, could there be advocacy towards events happening in Black neighborhoods, then possibly connect with wineries for support? While hiring Black wine lovers that they've met, becoming representatives for companies, create kind of a cycle into new communities, create a learning experience that they can share with the Black community. So I'm not exactly sure what events we're talking about, the kinds of events, but Rara is essentially saying, is there a way to create more of an entry point into predominantly Black neighborhoods to create kind of an interest and an education and an experience?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the issues circle around education and providing entry points for people that don't look like everybody else in this industry. And, what format that take, maybe it depends on the market and where we live. But, especially in upstate New York with this proximity to the Finger Lakes, and this land that is so incredible to us and allows us to create these beautiful wines, and knowing that these wineries often need extra hands just to get through harvest, it seems like there's a great opportunity to, bring some people in to help them understand and see all aspects of it. I've been very lucky to call, Colleen and Sebastian, who own Living Roots, now my friends. And, they've said every once in a while, oh, we need some help bottling wine. And I jump at the opportunity because if somebody interested in it, I just need to see how it's done to better understand it. And I think a lot of people are like that. I need to touch things to learn. And if we're able to give people opportunity to touch things and learn, I think it could open up this, landscape even further.
How did you first get in touch with Colleen and Sebastian at Living Roots?
I think Andy and I went to taste once, and our favorite thing to do is walk into any place where we're tasting and say that we're industry, because it's a great way just to sort of facilitate conversation further. And I believe we did that at Living Roots and then sort of realized some common connections between Colleen and I. And then the more we spoke, we kind of realized we all kind of had a sort of a similar ethos going just around a good time and good wine.
And that sense of welcome that you described there, I've got an email from a listener named Christian who says, how welcoming has the Finger Lakes been for Black writers and Black customers? Generally, how do you rate the Finger Lakes industry in that regard?
I would say that some are doing great. Some maybe a little bit of needs improvement. But, you know, the people who are the most welcoming are actively reaching out. And I think that's a little bit of a different feel. And honestly, I think it's also just because of the times that we're in, the people who have really sort of decided to double down in their support are actively giving it. And that sort of makes the people who are quiet seem even quieter.
Well, and so let's hit that point again then. So when you talk about actively showing support, not waiting to be reached out to, but reaching out on their own in various ways, what are some of those ways?
You know, even forming, you know, a task force or reaching out to somebody and saying, you know, we are thinking about doing a newsletter that, you know, shows this level of content with a focus on diversity, reaching out to somebody of color and saying, would you mind taking a look at this? Would you, you know, let us know if we're headed in the right direction? It shows full action. And I've had a few brands do that to me, and I'm very impressed by them. And not only that, but they are also giving me the opportunity to sort of learn and explore their brands and how they make the wine more. So while I might be servicing them in a way, they're also servicing me. So I think more of that, just actively trying to, you know, expand your voice in a way that's more inclusive for more people, and doing it in a way that's well-studied is what more people need to be doing.
In the Finger Lakes industry, that's really predominantly white in terms of its ownership in winemaking. Do you think that there is a hesitation, a fear about saying or doing the wrong thing, maybe a clumsiness that comes with that?
Absolutely. And I think that exists everywhere. You know, and I hate to say it, but when you drive out to the Finger Lakes, it's surrounded by signs that say, like, multiculturalism or America. So those are the only options that we're talking about for some of the people that live in that area. So I can understand the fear of being the one to speak out. But, you know, their market, especially those that are selling through distributors, reach much further than what we see right in front of us. And I think that's important to remember. And I also just think, you know, again, the more that you can use your resources within reason to study what you want to say and reach out to people, you might find that you're increasing your audience by just increasing who you think you can market to. You might be selling yourself short.
Well, in our last few minutes, I want to talk about authenticity and how it's sort of measured, because every so often you see a brand do something as colossally stupid as Pepsi when they had, who was it, Kendall Jenner? They recreated this. It was like a protest and then a police line. And one of the Jenners goes up and gives a cop a Pepsi and gives a protester a Pepsi. And everyone's like shaking hands and partying. I mean, it was the most crass, obviously opportunistic, you know, pablum that meant nothing other than buy Pepsi. And they were exposed for that. And I have to think that was a mistake. Even for their bottom line. But it's not always as clumsy as that. But still, you've got brands, I think, that when you get people in marketing meetings, they go, well, what should we say about this? What do customers want to hear about this? What would make us look good? What would make us talk about our product? Some of the things are the right questions, some of the wrong ones. How do you measure, as a consumer, authenticity for brands that are willing to make a statement or try to make a statement?
You know, that whole ad was wild because it really made me wonder, especially working in marketing and have been on the advertising side. I wanted to know who was sitting at the table.
I know. Oh, my gosh. Was there nobody in the room who went, I don't know?
That's a little questionable. Yeah. I mean, and that's the question overall, right? You get nervous to release something that might be poorly received, but who was sitting at the table? That's how you can maybe make sure, you know, really do some true testing and make sure that this will perform properly. And sorry, can you repeat your question?
Well, and what though makes you feel, they're not always as clumsy and silly as that, where it's easy to say that's ridiculous, but what makes you feel a brand or a company is being sincere when they do try to make an effort?
Sure. You know, we're in this weird place where I think there was sort of this wave of this performative marketing moment. Everybody sort of spoke out because they thought they had to. And, you know, we're going to, you know, pledge to donate X, Y, and Z, and then silence. You never heard anything again. And you can tell, I think, that people, at least myself, some of these brands that I really looked up to and loved that just had these unbelievable descents, like everything happening at Bon Appetit is the one thing I talk about all the time. It just breaks my heart because that was one of my favorite brands. And it seems like they're, you know, getting back on the right track, that they brought in the right people to do that. But I think that everybody, once you made any kind of declaration, was looking for actually seeing that in action, seeing feeds, you know, diversify, going to websites and seeing that diversify as well. You know, you can really tell when it's not genuine. And unfortunately, I think that almost shines harder than being quiet, because it really was just a self-servicing act, which nobody's asking for either.
Last 30 seconds, what are you going to do next?
That's a great question. I'm soul searching every day to figure it out. But no matter what, it's definitely going to involve a glass of wine at the end of the night.
I want to say again, Maya, how much I was touched by the way you led the conversation on the evening of the second dinner at the historic German House, and the message that I think, because I've written about this industry for a number of years, but it's a message that I think is an industry that's grappling with more seriously, perhaps now more than ever. And I think leaders like you are pushing people to do that. I'm really grateful for the time, and I hope eventually, even now, but maybe in the aftertimes when this pandemic's over, we can share a glass of wine sometime.
I would love that. Thank you so much for having me on, Evan. This has been really amazing.
That's Maya Johnson, who she was behind Chasing Grapeness before she put it on hiatus for now. We will see what she does next. Our thanks to Aqua Porter from Yoga for a Good Hood for joining us as well earlier this hour. Rob Braden is the engineer of Connections. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you are a member of member-supported public radio. This is day 3 of our membership campaign. That's it. So when I say member-supported, I hope that's you. And I hope you have a great afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow.